Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Indigenous Vision Podcast. So good to be here with you today, Melissa.
It is episode 69.
Oh, my goodness. Beautiful.
It is beautiful. So here we are in September. I feel great. I had a wicked cold suit. I don't know if I mentioned that in the last podcast, but I feel like totally different recording this time around because my spirit energy is like back. So I feel amazing and super excited right now.
That's so good. Yeah, we still slayed it.
It was still awesome, but like, it's amazing how just having your health is so important. I mean, I remember walking to the store sick and buying orange juice and looking at all the normal people. And I was like, I just want to feel like them, just normal and walking in life instead of like sweating and coughing, trying to make it back to my apartment. I'm so dramatic though when I'm sick. I really, really am.
Somebody take care of me. You need all the love and snuggles and be tucked in and get soup.
Right. I have to give a special shout out to all the delivery drivers in the world because they have made my life so amazing. Like the Instacart people, all the Grubhub people, like I have a deep appreciation. I do not overlook any drivers, any delivery people, because you are doing such a great service for people like me who live alone. When I get sick, you are the person that I need. You come to the rescue. So right. A big extra shout out to all the delivery drivers out there in the world.
Isn't it crazy how we don't even acknowledge sometimes the labor? Like I just got off a call. We were talking about land acknowledgements and how to do a meaningful land acknowledgement that wasn't performative and it's more action oriented. And I told her all kinds of awesome ways to be involved and make the history present and bring the people back alive, mention the extermination and assimilation. But she said a lot of times people are mixing labor and land acknowledgements together. And I thought that was really important because especially if we're in a justice conference where I find myself a lot, justice, ethics, DEI conferences. And a lot of times the land acknowledgement is pretty performative, but I think it's really cool to also mention the injustices of other people in that area. So like, welcome to Missoula, Montana, everybody. This is the traditional territory of Salish, Blackfoot, Nez Perce, Pend'oreille, Kootenai are all people who pass through, use this valley extensively. But we should also acknowledge the contemporary city of Missoula and all the Chinese labor that was exploited and underpaid and were forced to live underground and pretty much in hiding because of the discrimination that they faced while they built the city we're enjoying right now.
That is such a beautiful way to acknowledge everybody that has contributed to our current society. That I've never heard that part before of the labor that went into creating the actual infrastructure of like what we are sitting in, literally. That is so awesome. You know, I just watched last week's episode of Reservation Dogs and they did their land acknowledgement and they were like acknowledging the dinosaurs and like yes, going super far back.
That's funny. I purposefully
snap your fingers.
I have purposefully avoided snapping fingers ever since that got popular, just because I feel like it's so funny. I don't know.
The performative aspect, I think, is what a lot of really great would-be allies struggle with. Is maybe there's some people are genuinely trying to acknowledge the land, but maybe they don't really know how. I mean, Google can take you so far, right? You can Google who used to be here, what tribes, according to the Wikipedia article. But you said something before we hit record, how people can like make it actionable.
Yeah. And so we have a citizen science project. That's an international mapping project. And you can just download or print that submit form right there or fill it out online because you can pull it up on your phone too. But go out into your city and your town or around your town and just look at the educational placards and the historical markers that are surrounding your city. Go to the trailheads and look at the name of the trailheads, the trails and the mountains, and try to think critically about who named it that, why they named it that, and if it's not told by, why is it not told by the original Indigenous people of the area? So if you're doing a land acknowledgement, it's important to say, hey, look, we're gathering today under Mount Donahue, which is formally known as the traditional place name. And it's not known that well because, well, we exterminated and assimilated all of the Indigenous people in this local area. Like, let's be frank about it and just call it what it is. And those eras, we were talking about how those eras were actually government policy eras in Canada and the US. And I've seen so many academic papers contesting the fact or the idea that there might be a genocide on the North American continent. But that was the only amazing thing that I think really came from the Pope's visit, is that he acknowledged genocide of Indigenous people, which I think is amazing. So it came straight from the Pope's mouth.
Yeah. To hear that vocalized, even I was like, whoa, they actually said that, because yeah. So many people are in denial about it and just like, you're all just overreacting. That there's no way this could have happened here. Actually it did, and we are living survivors of it. Processing that as a Indigenous person, I'm like, my family literally survived that, and that's why I am here. That's a lot. Yeah,
it is. It's crazy. And that's why I had my first like breakdown in life at like 9, because I saw, well, in the same like year or summer, I learned about Starvation Winter and all the people who died and the mass graves behind our local boarding schools. Oh, so there's a mass grave from Starvation Winter. And then there's also and as a 9-year-old girl, I had no idea like what I was encountering or looking at or hearing, I guess. But what I did know is that schools are not supposed to have graveyards behind them.
Yeah.
Like, those are the kids that went to school that died. That's what this graveyard behind the school is. And so it made me scared of white people. It made me scared of the church, and it made me scared of going to school. Like, I was just a little girl, you know. You know, I don't know if my mom and her friends specifically talked like about this and made a strategy, but I think that they recognized something in me and my behavior. And that's the same time where they started really sending me to all these leadership camps and youth camps and like really working on me and exposing me to different people to like even test those assumptions that I was forming at that time, that I'm a disposable Indian woman and the US government and white people want to kill me. I had that in my head and I was freaked out for a long time. Like, oh my God, like, can you imagine the anxiety? Like, it's, yeah, there was just a lot of anxiety and depression and fear that I had learning about our world and our treatment. And
it's a lot to process. I remember being a young person when I realized, you know, growing up in a city and learning from in school, I had to learn in school because my parents didn't talk about it. My parents are 60 scoop. Like, they were cut off. But just learning that you were a part of this great nation of people that are like gone now, it caused this spiral of like an existential crisis that has followed me my whole life. Like, I'm constantly like, why am I here? What am I supposed to do? It's just this huge thing that's just always been with me. And for the longest time, I thought, oh my gosh, I am so cursed. But now I'm like, I am so freaking blessed to have like made it this far out of a lineage like that. So there you go. And to acknowledge the land and everything around me is something that I take very seriously and respect even today, especially with when I travel and I acknowledging, I've actually learned something today for acknowledging the labor, because I'm someone who acknowledges the labor everywhere, because I've been working in the service industry. I've been the labor so many times. Like when I walk the Las Vegas Strip, I like nod to the people changing the garbages because they're everywhere all the time. And people just ignore everybody all the time. I mean, there are so many people out here maintaining the structure of our system, and people just don't even acknowledge them as people. It just drives me nuts.
Why do we have an unconscious script to ignore the help?
I don't know.
It's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a conscious script where we're all taught somehow, somewhere along the way, to ignore or pass over with our eyes and not even acknowledge a person changing our trash can. That's how cultural humility started. For those of who haven't listened to the first few episodes or that cultural humility podcast, is when they gathered all the doctors in the Oakland Bay Hospital, the janitor said to the lead doctor, "I've been changing your trash for like 20 some years and you've never asked my name."
That's crazy. They could have been like chopping it up this whole time, being friends, telling jokes.
Yes. Having fun at work and being comfortable at work for everybody.
Yeah. I don't think I've actually changed trashes. You know, when I worked at the convenience store, I would change trashes, and it's a hard job.
I did that as a housekeeper. It was so nasty cleaning up after people, but I did a good job. And
every time I see a housekeeper, I acknowledge them. I'm like, "Hey, how's it going?" So many people just like tunnel vision. They're just like, "Nope, don't got time to talk to this person."
Right. I strip my room for them. So I take my sheets off and I bundle them in a way that I know housekeepers bundle them. I put all my towels into a pile for them. So everything's stripped in my room for them.
That is so smart. I'm going to have to start doing that. I just... Yeah. Throw money on the bed. I'm like, "Sorry, gotta go."
That's so nice. I love that. I love when I would find a $5 bill or something, you know, coffee or lunch money on the, yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you're a tipper.
I am. I work in the service industry, even right now, like I do 3 days a week at the restaurant, and tipping culture is just so nice. And I throw my tips around too. Like I've learned to see money differently this past year too, and not have this scarcity mindset. I'm just like, I tip big everywhere I go because the money just keeps coming and going. It's like this circle of like fun and help that I can get to share with other people. So I tip my Uber drivers. I tip the delivery people like hugely because like I said, I like bow down. I'm like, "Thank you so much. You have no idea how much you are contributing to my life." And then obviously when I go out to eat, I always tip the server because I know what it's like to get a table of people who have never heard a drop of cultural humility or even experience that kind of connection with people and just to be treated like a slave servant or something like that.
Yes. That reminds me of that movie I watched a long time ago, and we talked about it in one of our podcasts, where this early like period piece, early European girl was in India during the colonization of India, and her parents died, and then she ended up going with her uncle who had a woman of color as his housekeeper or maid or, you know, matron or whatever they call the women who keep the house. And the young girl was like, "Are you going to dress me?" And I'm like, "Oh my goodness. Can you imagine being that saucy with somebody about them dressing you? Like putting your socks on?"
No. One time I was out to dinner with a friend at a really fancy restaurant, and she snapped at the server, and I felt so uncomfortable. And we weren't that close where I could say like, "Hey, I think that's really inappropriate." But it just made me so shocked that someone that I knew would snap at a waiter like that and just be rude. And I thought, "Oh my goodness, I am never going out to eat with this person again. I might not even be friends with them." And guess what? We're not friends anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Rude people. It's hard. Like I would not like to go out regularly with that, like kind of all those cringe moments.
Acknowledgement at its most basic form can go so far, whether it be the people around you, especially homeless. I mean, we could do a whole show on homeless people. I acknowledge homeless people all the time. In fact, there's one in my neighborhood here that I'm like, quote unquote, friends with because this is like their territory and I see them so often. I thought, I can't ignore this person, this actual human being that's always around. And now he says, well, if you ever need any help with anything, let me know. And I'm like, how can I use him as something, you know, maybe move a dresser? I don't know. But I can't ignore people. I just can't.
Mm-mm. It's so rude to not acknowledge somebody's presence or look through them.
And the land too, like when you were talking about going to the trailheads and critiquing them, that is constantly what I'm doing. I'm like, why is this named this? How do I find the real name? You know, like I'm constantly get in those thoughts and it drives me kind of crazy sometimes, because especially around here, but I don't even really know who to ask. I'm going to the Pahrump Powwow in November, and I'm going to do my best to get as much in a most respectful way to approach someone and say, hey, how do I find out more about these places? Because I am lost in the most beautiful place.
Right. I know. And it does help if you make an Indigenous friend. And I'm sure one of those natives must like our project or hiking or doing something. Remember, for all the natives listening, you don't have to be native to do our citizen science project. It's just narrative correction. So it takes critical thinking and a justice lens and looking at sources and terminology, like is that terminology diminishing or is it making excuses for the genocide, etc. But there's so many different ways that we can do things more meaningful by acknowledging things. And that's like a big part of the MAP project. Is a big part of it goes back to that dream that I had when I was a little girl, it telling me to acknowledge Sowetabeeks or water spirits in these places and to protect them. That's what I've been trying to work and do. And I feel like it feeds me and it feeds my soul in a different way with a different kind of energy, because it gets depressing, right? You learn about the history of a place and it's really bloody and brutal. It also is hopeful too at the same time, because then you think about the stories of survival, like that little meme, you know, if we have historical trauma, then we also have historical resilience and strength as well.
And so, wisdom and yeah, knowledge.
I know we're all survivors. If you're an Indigenous person living today, you know, there were some counts at 100 million Native people on this continent during contact. Oh my goodness, someone's messaging 100 million people. And that's contested because, you know, we didn't have censuses. And then my tribe got knocked down to something stupid. Like one nation had 2,500 people left at one point. And I knew that academia was wrong in their estimate and their argument that there wasn't genocide in the number of Indigenous people here at first contact, because I can see my land. We were never removed. And we have camps in three provinces and two states, Wyoming and Montana, and there's some in Idaho and the Dakotas, but we have camps all over this land. And some of these villages are like more than 1,000 teepees strong. And we had way more than 2,500. Well, that was that first census roll for one of the nations that got knocked all the way down to 2,500 people. And we're still, you know, this is why I advocate for lateral violence to go away, because we've been surviving genocide and we've been fighting for our lives and our livelihoods, our culture, and just being the way we want to be for our entire lives. Our grandparents did it. Their grandparents did it. That's why I advocate lateral violence to be done away with. And to try your best as an individual to not hate somebody in our community for their success or even for their behavior or their addiction. Whatever state they're in, we should accept it and try to work with it, right? You know, as long as they're not violent towards us. And for the Blackfeet Nations, there's only 41,000 enrolled Blackfoots in the whole world. And we have a unique language and we have a unique culture, and there's only 41,000 of us. And if we were truly animals, then that would make us endangered for sure.
Yeah.
That's my argument against lateral violence, is that there's only 41,000 of us Blackfoots. Why hate each other if we have enough hate coming from outside of the community? And it's that way for every other tribe. I've worked with some tribes as a water operator trainer that only had 300 people enrolled.
My goodness. I can't even imagine.
Mm-mm. I can't either. and how scary it must be to think that you're 299 people away from being extinct off the face of the earth as a recognized people. And keep in mind, everybody, that blood quantum laws and policies and rules that are happening within tribal nations are all a federal government policy that was implemented on our behalf, and we would not receive money for food or land or clothing if we didn't accept these governmental policies and the blood quantum policies. And so what blood quantum policies do is they diminish sovereignty and personhood. When there is no more tribally enrolled people, the federal governments are released from their treaty duties, even though all of those treaties have been broken already. They are officially released from their treaty duties. And that's the promise to hunting and harvesting in our traditional areas, education, housing, and healthcare.
Yeah. It's literally so hard to get enrolled these days. Yeah. You know, my mom had to fight for my sister and I's enrollment when we were younger. We weren't born treaty. My mom had to fight for it, but she got it. Now we got it. But still, like, they make it really, really, really hard so that they can get out of there. They're just so sneaky.
They are. I have a friend who works in mapping the 60 Scoop people and how far they were taken from their community. And I meet up with her at mapping conferences every year or so. I saw her map, and they took little Indian kids out of their community and sent them 3,000 miles away sometimes.
Louisiana.
To kill the Indian and save the man. That was the specific mandate that they were working under. And yeah, your parents were part of it. And then lots of residential school people were part of it. They tried all kinds of extermination and assimilation tactics to make sure that we were, you know, stand up human beings. My class kind of gave me a funny look yesterday when I was talking about something along these lines. I can't remember. Yesterday was a crazy day at school because I just came in from the field. I felt like it was Monday, but it was Tuesday and class is Tuesday. And then my son didn't want to go to school. And yeah. And I said something along the lines of, you know, I would gladly be called a savage if civilization is redefined to be what it actually is and its actual impact and how much of a mess that civilization and our infrastructure has caused and all of our management and relational, what are they, like faux pas, like all of these things that are just
colonial.
Yes.
BS. You know what? I've been thinking about this because I feel very unprofessional all the time in this colonial structure. And I kind of pride myself on it. I'm like, I don't want to be this rigid, professional, heartless, unacknowledging person anymore or be a part of that. And I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. And so I said that to my class, and it was the first time I had ever said it in like years, because I used to say it a lot. Like, I'd rather be a, you know, go ahead, call me a savage. I'd rather be savage than one of the civilized men who caused this destruction. Point to any hill we're tearing down or filled up with trash or dirty stream or, you know, poop flushing into the water. Like,
literally.
Savage than any of that civilized ness.
What were their reactions?
Nobody said anything. I just kind of got big eyes like, oh, shoot.
She's savage, they were probably thinking.
That's why I supported Rihanna's Fenty. I was like, okay, I think I'll try to own the word, because, you know, I don't like it when people use these words and try to reclaim a derogatory word and empower it. Like, I think it can be, yeah, it can go wrong. And I have always felt some way about Rihanna calling her undies savage Fenty.
I'm wearing the brand right now.
Oh, me too. I got it on right now.
I am wearing Savage Fenty, and I get it. Like, I guess it's, I'm desensitized maybe because I grew up in the city. Savage meant something else, but it also meant what the script, the colonial script also associated with was being an actual Indian savage, you know?
Right. And if you're interested in that citizen science project, you'll go out into your town, and if you find the right historical marker, it will refer to your local indigenous people as the savages or the hostiles
or the Constitution itself has it.
Yes, the Constitution itself has it. So yeah, it's not a big stretch to get it all on these educational placards and historical markers. So I guess I have to change the Constitution.
What I've been saying. And people are like trying to lambaste me about it. They're like, what do you know, you crazy socialist from Canada? I'm like, okay. Just trying to be nice.
You just live in a different paradigm and have a different value set. That's all.
Right? Like, I can't believe how reactive people get to me trying to be, you know, respectful, compassionate, and move with humility. It's just like, sometimes I just get zapped.
That's funny. I'm sorry.
It's all good. It's a laughable thing now. I'm just like, woo, okay, we got lots of work to do.
But flipping the page on another note, you know, my goldfish brain, your skin looks amazing. And my skin never looks that amazing when I'm sick.
Oh, thank you. I'm wearing a lot of makeup. I wear some really good brands, Suta, but thank you though. But yeah, my skin is doing okay. I've been drinking a lot of fluids, and being sick, I forced myself to drink a lot of fluids. I was just so tired of being sick, and I was jealous of all the people wandering around life not sick, and I just wanted to rejoin them. So here I am now. But thank you. I'm pretty excited about being not sick and getting back to life again, because we have so much to do.
Oh my goodness, it's busy. It's busy. I'm doing that TEK class as a favor, and it's taking up a lot of time trying to get the syllabus together, because I inherited the syllabus a couple weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago now, and I'm only a month into it. So my students only have that much information. And so I'm going to try to finish that by this afternoon and get that uploaded into our Moodle, which is a new software that you use to communicate with students. And it's kind of cool. It has the whole syllabus outlined virtually, and you can click on each section and see the readings and then the assignments. And then they can even submit their assignments over Moodle too, which is really cool.
That's amazing. Wow. We've come so far.
Oh my goodness, Melissa, big news organizationally. We officially have our first working dog. I got approved for a dog in my apartment. One of the breeders at home saw the fundraising video of the fancy tent and the dogs that I put together. And he was like, do they just use res dogs? And I'm like, or do they just use shelter dogs? And I'm like, no, I think sometimes trainers can come in and they can bring their own dog with them. And he said, well, I'll gift you a dog every year or so often, to, as long as you're working with them, to help get working dogs out to different tribal departments across the nation.
That's amazing.
And I know. So I'm going to be a trainer and a handler, and I want to train my dog across the board. And so these dogs are trained in like cop dog things. I don't know when I'm ever going to need that one, but maybe she'll be rented by a cop. I hope not, because that seems like a dangerous situation. But yeah, guns and drugs is something that I want her trained on, just to train it. And I think that would be good in terms of like poaching, poaching hunters on tribal lands. And so these dogs can follow our game wardens, and maybe they can find stashes of ammunition or poaching guns, or actually catching the poachers in action. Then search and rescue. This is really important for our missing murdered Indigenous people work. And so in addition to self-defense for women and girls sponsorship, we're also going to train her in search and rescue, live find, and cadaver find. And I'm thinking of like therapy for her already, because she's a girl. I'm thinking of her therapy in terms of like what we do after we find a dead body, and like how I get her, because I heard that search and rescue dogs get depressed if they start finding lots of dead bodies.
I bet.
And then the average conservation dog stuff, which is invasive plants and species, and then disease. So brucellosis and scarpy, and now CWD. And I told our president, a president of our board, his name's Harley Bastine, and he said a good name for her would be Itumahmahka, which means the one who leads the others, or the leader. And I think that's such a perfect name. So Ituma, I don't know what to call her for short yet, because I don't know what that Itumahmahka is, the full name. And Anna used to answer to Anna Imita, and he would talk Blackfoot, because I could say Buxa, but Anna, books about Anna Emika, and he would know that that's come, and yet he knows how to eat. Yeah, most of his commands were in Blackfoot. So dogs can understand multiple languages and can answer to long names and short names. And so Anna was Anna Emita, and also answered to Anna, Stinky Roo, beautiful.
This dog loved it.
Beautiful. I know he would.
Anna Banana is what I like to call him.
Yes. And he knew when he was called beautiful because his chest would puff up and he would get a little waggy and... He's, yes, I am. And he always felt more beautiful. Like, he hated his baths and he got regular baths. But he would always feel more beautiful after a blowout.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet.
And he would.
Who doesn't?
Around, right? He would prance around and like let the wind blow through his hair.
It majestic.
Was so cute, yes. But she, this new girl I'm getting, I'm kind of nervous because Anna was my everything for like 17 years. And this new girl is a German Shepherd puppy that the breeder can't sell as a German Shepherd, like a pure German Shepherd, because she's got a floppy ear.
Oh,
I know, one floppy ear. He's like, maybe she was bit or something as a puppy, but people want those big pointy even ears, and so purebred German Shepherd who can't be sold because of one cute little floppy ear.
Oh, congratulations. I can't wait to meet them one day.
I know. I'm excited for the training because I like to listen to dogs and communicate with dogs. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how she points and how she works and then how she trains me to work with her too. And I hope she's a good working dog, because they did warn me, like, you know, not every dog is a working dog or has that mentality. And so be prepared for her to fail and just be a home dog, you know. Are you prepared for that? And I'm like, yeah, because she's a gift, and it's insulting to refuse gifts. So I don't want to refuse her, especially because the way everything lined up, I think it's kind of meant to be.
Totally. Yeah. It's always, I found it a little bit nerve-wracking to get new animals after you've had, like you said, a companion for 17 years. My cat had for like 15 years, Varla, and I had these new cats, and I thought, what if they're not as special as her? Or what if we don't have the connection? And we don't. We all have different connections to each animal. Like, I have now two cats, and my relationship with each of them is totally different. It's totally different. It's not better or worse. It's just different. Right. So I'm excited for you.
Yeah. And German Shepherds are like, I'm nervous because Anna was not, he was a dog, but he wasn't a dog. Like, I don't know if anybody knew Anna, but he didn't bark unless I like really coaxed it out of him. And I had to make him like, come on, say something.
I would hear them bark. I heard Anna bark when I'd come around the corner. Yeah. I'd see Anna in your backyard and I'd be like, hey, Anna Banana. And
he gives a little excited.
More like a yelp. Yeah.
Yeah. And he had such a handsome little voice. And I always remember being like amazed by the sound of his voice because he never hardly used it. He used it one time, which was really memorable. He was a young dog. He was like two, maybe less than that, right around there. And we had to share a sampling station with the USGS people. And they didn't let us up on their ladder or let us take our dip samples from the middle of the river on their fancy equipment. We had to like crawl down the bank and access the river from that way. And then I had to extend my dip pole out as far as possible and then try to take a good sample of the river. And one time one of the USGS guys was there at the same time I was, and I saw his vehicle. And I don't know if Anna saw his vehicle, but we walked down over the hill. And then as soon as I looked up, I must have yelped because this man scared me. He was like 7 feet tall, had a great big white beard and a great big, he was bald. He was like 7 feet tall, had a beard and was really like built like Mr. Clean, like an older version of Mr. Clean is exactly what this man looked like. And I looked up and I was like, ah! and Anna was like, row, row, row. And he was so cool when he did that because he actually, the guy surprised Anna, and Anna didn't lunge towards him and attack. Anna made sure where I was and backed into me and started backing me up as he was barking at the man. And I was like, you're smart, Anna. That's good. Like,
good.
Like, he didn't just run and attack, right? Like, he
protected.
He pushed me away from the man. And I regret telling him no at that moment. I should have just petted him and told him good boy, because he never barked at another person again after I told him no.
Yeah, Anna was super nice. All the days that I like helped walk and take care of him during the day, never barked at anybody.
Oh, you just made me think of Dee and her picking up Anna's poo as she's like puking across.
That was me.
That's you. Oh my God.
That wasn't Dee.
Oh my God.
Dee didn't want to walk Anna all the time. And I was like, I'll do it. I was so fresh in Phoenix. I had just been there like literal weeks. And she's like, I got to walk my cousin's dog. And I don't feel like doing it. And I was like, I'll do it. So I started walking Anna, and like, sure enough, Anna just had a big poop on a busy corner of city street, and I had to pick it up. And I was like gagging Sutta to the point where a little bit of throw up came up from my stomach. And I was just like, whoo, this is crazy. This is why I can't be a dog person.
Oh no.
I can do cat litter boxes all day, but like touching it even through a plastic glove, I was like, oh, I can't do it.
Squishy. Yeah.
And Anna's just like, ha, 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 let's go have some fun. Like nothing's happening.
And all the people in the cars are just ewing
looking at me. Ew. On a hot summer day.
How dare you let your dog poop right there?
I love dogs though. I've always walked my friend's dog. My friend had a German Shepherd actually for years and years. Throughout their whole lifetime, I knew them. So they're a big, beautiful, joyful breed of dogs that's how I know German Shepherds was walking them. Yeah.
Oh, I think, I feel like in some way my grandpa might have had something to do with this, because my grandpa always told me I needed a good truck and a German Shepherd. And
it's their joints that I remember was the problem in the end.
That's what I'm not looking forward to.
So heating pads, massages, stretching, get it. I'm trying to stretch my cats. My male cat is showing signs of like, ooh, I'm not stretching enough. And there's ways you can stretch a dog, but I tried to do it on a cat and they're just not having it.
I could see that slapping him. Anna taught me that I was a really good dog massager. And because he was a puppy when I was going to night school, I went to massage night school. And when I would get home from night school at 11 o'clock at night, he would be like, so happy. I haven't seen you since 5 o'clock, 5:30. And he would jump on my table. And I would be tired. I'd be like putting my books down, taking my shoes off. And this dog jumps on the table and then like lifts his head up like, you're going to massage me now, right? Like, come over here and put your hands on me. I'm like, what dog jumps on a massage table? And it's like, all right, do it now.
So, love it.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I'll have to start her early on like a glucosamine chondroitin.
Yeah, that's what I would do. So much exciting stuff to look forward to. So yeah, thank you for joining us today. Thanks for acknowledging us, and hopefully you acknowledge the world around you next time you go out somewhere.
Thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision podcast. You can find out more about us on our official website, including how to contact us, make a donation, or play back any of our music radio shows or this podcast. Don't forget to share with your friends and write a review if you've got time. We totally appreciate you sharing your time with us.